show.
Well, now we're on the post show. Say it again.
Yo, yo, welcome to the post show.
There you go. All right, so it's springtime in Pittsburgh. We had the draft this weekend. I guess there was like...
This week.
Yeah, I'm worried about going downtown tomorrow or close downtown because of the draft. Of me
in LA. I refuse to go downtown all this week. I said Microsoft couldn't even pay me enough to go down to the office this week.
This is not the right time to be going
They
down.
Can kiss my ass.
There's twice as many people downtown as there would be normally. It's
at least.
And they said there was inside the gates, you know, for the perimeter of the draft areas at
inside
State Park and... On the north side, 260,000 people yesterday?
I thought it was 330 or something.
I just saw the articles at 260.
And you dance at the That's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we beat the record, all-time record, of the most people at an NFL draft.
Of course the Ginzers did that. Go Steelers.
And I don't understand why. It's NFL fucking draft. Who gives a shit?
Apparently a lot of people do.
Not me. Why do you need to be there for the NFL? Like, it's not like there's any sport going on.
One of my coworkers is the only one who's like, but I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, so they're never any good during the football season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, eternal optimism. I can go with my buddies, kind of like hanging out with a bar. It's more of a festival thing. I don't get it. I do get... Okay, the part I get... is this is a spectacle kind of like the Three Rivers Regatta, right? Like, you know, that's fun to go to and do stuff, and there's people there. Now, if it's obscenely crowded and
I can't deal
expensive, like who? What?
Like the parking was insane.
Even if you're parking downtown at the city lots, mm-hmm. the city garage, it's $100.
Yeah,
I can't put myself in. The headset of I'm going to pay $100 to go see this thing.
What do you think people
and deal with the crowds?
It's just a big press conference.
And deal with the
it's
crowds.
Not like, there's not any entertainment going on.
There's Brett Michaels.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff going on.
And
Trace Lats
Wiz
did a
Khalifa
concert.
Did a
yesterday.
Concert.
Really? I didn't know there was like entertainment.
No, there were a bunch of.
And then it's kind of like the. You ever go to the Regatta? Have you ever go to the arts festival?
I don't think
You ever go to anything?
You need to go to the arts festival this year.
Okay.
You need to go to the arts festival this year because they rebuilt the arts festival or moved it and made it for the NFL draft. But now it's our new arts festival location.
Okay.
Starting this year. So apparently it's going to be amazing.
The...
And I'm not sure exactly where it is.
So there's a perimeter. You need to have an app and a registration to get in, you know, this, that, the other thing. But there was a lot of, like, I know Rivers of Steel was there doing blacksmithing demonstrations, and there was food vendors, and, you know, it was a thing.
It was like a fair. It's like a big county fair times
it was on steroids.
It was a county fair where you could go see Brett Michaels, former lead singer of Poison. Was it Poison?
Yeah.
Poison. You know, do an over-the-hill, you know, has-been concert. Wiz Khalifa, Pittsburgh rapper, do a concert. And there's someone else.
But it's not like, but that's not like the actual event.
It's
that's
part
just...
of the NFL draft.
Oh.
Yeah, it was part of it.
But then there's the actual draft where there was a big pavilion set up in the parking lot outside the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That overflowed. So then the overflow was watching it on the Jumbotron in Heinz Field or Acrisure Stadium.
Acrisure, which was packed.
Yeah, that place was almost at capacity, including seating on the field.
Yeah.
I think it was just a bunch of Yinzers wanting to be part of history.
Well,
and that wins out.
I mean, it's an opportunity for an experience that, without having to travel.
If you're a Yinzer, it's history.
No, it's an opportunity for an experience that you wouldn't have normally, and you don't have to travel far to do it. And it's free, except for all the charges.
Except the $30 beers
everything.
And $100 parking and the
right.
$25 go-kart lifts if you need a ride back to somewhere.
Right.
It's weird. It's so weird. And, you know,
but today the city, they had that marathon thing, though. That was cool.
I didn't see that. Mm-hmm. City cut down.
It was, you know, right at our office.
The city did so much. Like, on the north side, they cut down the trees on the sidewalks to have more room. I guess they're going to replant them. And I'm like, NFL's paying for that? I think it's the city saying it's worth the investment for the business development.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were also like,
there's the economic multiplier.
All over the city, the city was removing like abandoned cars and stuff like that. You know, like, and I'm Mark. In like Homewood, where there's like no draft tourism in Homewood.
Yeah, and they were rebuilding, or they were planting trees there.
I mean, that's why I hope that the NFL gave the city like hundreds of millions of dollars and like,
I hope
they can use it to improve the city. Because I'm not, I have no problem with improving Homewood. I do not understand improving Homewood because of the draft, right? You know, that's the.
I don't know the deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the whole thing is a mystery to me. I'm just glad that I am on the other side of the river.
The river.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And I made it clear weeks ago that you guys cannot, meaning Microsoft, cannot afford to pay me enough to even consider going into the city. Like, there is no reasonable justification for them to send me into the city and for me to say, yeah, okay, I'll do it. No, no way. And
I did see that, like, there are the in-city schools are going to remote
they
learning.
They were remote. And they were renting out their parking spaces.
Mm, that pays for it.
Which pays for things for the school, which is great.
I don't like the NFL. Like, you know, there's the whole, like, player health thing that they're not very good at, you know. Anytime, I hate how they pay for placement, like, Shannon, what's the morning show you watch?
Today Show?
Today Show. You know, the Today Show will be like, oh my God, it's NFL season, and they'll be wearing their favorite hometown jersey, you know, and they act like it's, you know, this, you know, segment, but you know the NFL paid for that segment, you know, but it's not disclosed that the NFL paid for that segment. And that's one of the things that bugs me the most, like how they make it. Today Show makes the NFL seem like if you're not following the NFL, you're not an American. You know, that kind of thing. Or not an American, but you're not with it.
I just think it's a weird thing about media these days. It's so tied up in corporate shit.
And it just drives me so nuts. And like,
for me, I have more important things to do with my time. I'd rather be out in the shop doing shit. I used to sit inside and watch NASCAR races and bullshit all the time. And I regret it because that's time I will never get back from my life.
Yeah, you had a good time. You enjoyed yourself.
But it was still stupid, you know? My kids' birthday parties were scheduled around NASCAR races. That's how ridiculous
you like
I
NASCAR.
Was.
I don't.
Yeah,
it,
but it
I
was
don't
stupid.
See the problem of that.
It was stupid. I should have not done that. I mean, my kids literally are
don't be
like,
too hard on
the most important part of my life, aside from my husband. But you know, I prioritize NASCAR. Anyway, whatever. I have much more important things to do with my time.
Yourself.
I'm not going to sit and watch
you enjoy
anything.
NASCAR, so you prioritize yourself.
Well, okay, fine. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for trying to make me feel better.
There's nothing wrong with NASCAR. I was into it for a period of time.
Yeah, I was into it for a long time, though.
That's fine. You were in the South also, so
yeah.
That's different. I got into it. I thought it was... I got into the drama of the story of the race, right? Like, part of NASCAR is when they're out on the course, it's very...
When they're turning left.
When they're out on the track, it's very methodical. There's not much action unless there's a crash, right? But then there's high drama in the pit stop because one fucking lug nut doesn't get tight ruins the whole thing, you know? So they gotta.
Never mind the fact that if they decide to go into the pits early, then it could screw their chances of winning.
Sure. Yeah. But like, so there's this high drama of did they make the right gamble? I'm agreeing with did they make the right gamble, this, that.
That was a very light agreement. As an improv performer, I won't tell you. That was like not a lot of agreement. I was like,
I'm sorry. I felt interrupted, so I was trying to finish my point and then agree with her. But
sorry. I've been interrupted a lot.
I appreciate the gifts that you're giving. That's got to learn that improv. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. But you got to appreciate the gifts that you're giving.
I do. I don't know what that was.
All right. Point was, I was into NASCAR. I enjoyed the drama. I got it. And then I realized I was spending like every Sunday from February to November.
Yeah.
Watching TV. And that's too many Sundays tied to the TV. So I decided to do other things instead.
Exactly.
I was in baseball for a while. I think it's 162 games.
I hope you weren't a Pirates fan because would really be a waste of time.
My dad grew up in New York. So.
They won a lot when you were a big Yankees fan. So.
Yeah, that's at least you. Yeah.
They were like the best team in the league.
They were really, really good for not really when, I mean, like right after I moved to Pittsburgh is when things kind of, I moved to Pittsburgh in 98. 2001 was sort of the end of their reign. So,
how long were you in town before you started working in Autocom?
No, it was 98. It was pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. What brought you to Pittsburgh? I don't remember.
A girl. I've forgotten her name.
What's that?
I've forgotten her name. I don't remember.
Were you at home or were you in Cleveland?
I was at home.
Yeah. Okay. What comes next? Because Greg went to Case Western for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
didn't take. And look, this is what we were talking about before. So I recently got a promotion. My fifth at this job.
Woo-hoo! Congratulations.
And it reminded me of something that you said way back earlier. And here's the thing. Tana said it made you upset that you did that. And I'm like, no, Jeff was right. You were right when you did this at the time, which was I was a bad worker. No, I was a piece of shit. But I got better.
You got better. You'll never let me live it down. But, you know, I'm a much better manager now than I was. I wasn't a manager then.
True.
I was
the guy. You were thrust into being a manager.
Exactly. I was just going to say the same word. I was thrust into making sure two other people did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember
we were paying minimum wage. I mean, it was not a good situation.
Doing web development for $7.40 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
$7.40 an hour?
Yeah.
What year?
98.
Wow.
98, 99.
That is a terrible wage.
Mm-hmm. Jeff got me my job at a Nauticom. It was twice the payment I was getting.
I took a pay cut from King's to go to Nauticom. But it was my foot in the door in tech, right?
Yeah, so, look where you are now.
Yeah, but no, I took a pay cut. I can't remember how much of a pay cut. It wasn't a lot. It was maybe like 20 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I took a pay cut to go from working at a restaurant, a family restaurant bullshit thing.
It was a chain.
Yeah, doing like line work at a restaurant where you're not even like chopping shit, right? You're putting them in the microwave.
Yeah, grill cook, stuff like that. But to doing tech support for an ISP back when people were using modems to connect and Windows didn't come with software to connect to the internet. So you had to install extra. We had to mail out software to you so you could connect to the internet.
Yeah. It was a hell of a time.
Mm-hmm.
What's crazy is that we existed in that time and we're still here today in this time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like it's been that long, but when you look at it from that perspective, holy shit, it's been a long time.
It feels like so
much has changed.
A lot of generations have this.
Think about 28 years.
Think about the time from. Think about this, the 52 years from when man first flew to when they landed on the moon. 50 years. Like, someone saw that where there was hot air balloons and now there's a guy on the moon.
No, hot air balloons were way before. Hot air balloons were really late.
Well, but yeah, the only thing we had was hot air balloons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had flights across states and then flights across countries.
Yeah, it was 19... something that in 19 teens when flight the first, like, you know, the Wright brothers, big swing flight. But then we went to the moon on essentially modified weapons technology.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, basically tin cans and in the, like, least survivable, barely survivable way we could do it.
Yep.
So
but we did it.
Yeah, we did. We haven't talked since Artemis.
No.
Let's talk about Artemis.
This will be a science topic show. Actually, won't, like,
okay, yeah.
I won't. Off
no, Artemis is really cool. I mean, it was
I love
cool.
It.
It's the farthest people have ever been from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Apollo 13, I think, by thousand kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
The Oakland Coliseum.
So, like, not a huge amount, but still something. But actually sending the old pass low Earth orbit.
Haven't done it in our lifetimes.
Well, technically there was a SpaceX flight that did into like 500 kilometers, but that's not that.
Man?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what Jared Isaac, what's the guy? The NASA administrator was on that second flight.
Mm.
But that was, I think, the highest that had gone for a long time. But this is much different.
Shannon was around for the last Apollo mission.
Yeah, screw you.
We weren't.
What was it, 73?
72.
My sister would have read
it. I wasn't old enough to remember it, though.
No, I mean, you were.
We weren't even sperming in our daddy's bowels yet.
Whatever. So. Fuck you both.
We were eggs. Mm-hmm. Like, part of us were eggs. Cause half of us were.
No. Giant freak. It was awesome. I geeked out on the entire thing. I watched the live stream every day when they were doing mundane shit on the thing. I almost missed the launch. I was working. I lost track of time. I'm like, oh shit. I clicked the link to start the YouTube. T-minus 3 seconds.
Mm. Oh, you didn't tell me that.
I saw the launch, but it was...
like, T-minus 2 seconds.
As soon as I click it, there's fire. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. SLS is basically a shuttle remnant because it uses shuttle solid rocket boosters.
Solid rocket boosters in extra segments, so they're longer.
Yeah.
And then the red tank is pretty much the red tank from the shuttle, except the bottom of the red tank has three or four of the shuttle engines, which were in the glider lander.
And it's the largest. It is the largest rocket that's ever been made.
Did you also know that when it was taking off for those 8 minutes, it was the loudest thing on the planet?
I did not know that, but that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it does make sense, but it's also like, well, yeah, I guess unless there's, like, Krakatoa going off, it's going to be the loudest thing on the planet.
Well, it's also, like, a thing I like to ask people is, like, what's the hottest temperature? Where have we measured the hottest temperature in the solar system?
Front of the sun. No?
No, not even close.
What?
CERN.
Oh,
what?
Okay.
We get to 100 million degrees Kelvin, roughly. 100 million degrees Celsius. Something, you know, Kelvin and Celsius are roughly the same at that scale. But 100 million degrees at CERN, the sun is 15 to 20.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
I mean, it's in a tiny area.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like...
But the hottest natural place is the Corona, right? In the solar system, yeah.
No, it would be the center of the sun.
I thought the Corona was hotter than all of the body of the sun.
It's hotter than the surface of the sun by far.
Mm. Okay.
But not the center of the sun. Mm. Center of the sun is, like I said, about 15 million Celsius. Which is not hot enough to do fusion if it weren't for the immense gravitation.
Yeah. I presume you watched the flyby.
Like, oh, yeah.
Live. And,
Oh, well, it was Big Into the Mission. Yeah, I watched it all. I had the stats up on, you know, a couple different like sites that different
when they
stats
were
up.
Doing the way they were doing the observations and they're targeted and stuff like that. And, you know, most of the stuff wasn't getting broadcast over the radio, but the stuff they were, when they were talking about, like, if you watched enough, like, oh, they're talking about that crater. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're talking about that feature. Mm-hmm. That was really cool that you could hear and observe and be like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, I'm yeah, getting really. It.
What's also really cool is that I always have had the problem where when I look at pictures of the moon, particularly from the Apollo missions, I have the crater illusion problem where things look up right, like craters don't look like craters, they look like they're hills.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
With the higher resolution pictures we get, I don't have that problem at all. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, like with the more information we're getting, yeah, that problem goes away completely.
I know what you're talking about. I've never encountered it looking at Apollo era crater videos. You know, for people at home, this flyby of the moon was much further away than any of the Apollo flybys, even Apollo 13, where the moon was only as big as a basketball held at an arm's length. Mm-hmm. So imagine that right now with me. You can see a lot, especially with a 400 millimeter zoom lens, which they had on their cameras. But it's still only a basketball at arm's length. But that gave them this more global view, mm-hmm, of the moon. Versus
they also did it at a different time than any of the other Apollo missions. All the other Apollo missions were at full moon.
Full moon,
this was at the quarter moon. Mm-hmm. So they got to see parts that human eyes had never seen. Mm-hmm. Like we've had cameras on the moon. We've obviously mapped the entire lunar surface. But human eyes had never, mm-hmm, seen that part of the moon.
They made a really big deal about human... You know, a lot of people make the argument of why take the risk of sending humans into space if robots are so good? And NASA made a really good point of, like, the humans are so quick and adaptable that they can actually acquire, like, 100 times the data in the same flyby.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you saw the recent thing with the Earth rise or the Earth set picture that was taken from an iPhone. It was just like, because they caught it because they were like, oh, well, we're not going to get out of it, but we can get out of this tiny window and I can put my iPhone there and get it. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, that's the kind of thing a robot can never do.
Mm-hmm.
An AI can never
do. Did you see the, you know, the famous Apollo Earth rise, mm-hmm, thing? Did you see the Hank Green video where they took the audio? Like, he shot the perfect Earth rise photo with black and white film. I forget the guy's name. Was it Apollo 18? No, 18 didn't exist. Yes. It must have been...
It sure is.
I think it was Apollo 8?
8.
I was Apollo 8. That was 8. The first lunar...
Yeah, Apollo 8.
Yeah.
Taking pictures. He had black and white film in the camera. And the thing lined up. And he shot this grainy-ass but perfect composition photo of Earthrise. And it took him 30-40 seconds to have the other guy give him color film, load the color film.
Yep.
And the picture they actually got wasn't is great, but it wasn't if the initial black and white photo was with the right color film, it would have been breathtaking, right?
It was still breathtaking, but it would have been even more.
Yeah. But the photos they took from Artemis, oh my god!
I love the night side, the night side Earth that,
mm-hmm,
you know, with the high ISO, so it looks like day.
Yeah,
that was great because you could also see shit like you could see the auroras on both sides. You can see the sodium line, which is crazy.
The shot that shows the corona during the eclipse, mm-hmm, and like four other
really
planets.
An occultation. It wasn't, I mean, they called it an eclipse, but it was not an eclipse. It was an occultation.
Yeah, I mean, that's what an eclipse is. You can still see the corona.
It's right, not but, like, it, but it's not as, I mean, they were in a ship getting, that the body got in the way. It wasn't like a one celestial okay. body getting in the way of another celestial body, which
okay, I get you. But it's not like they maneuvered to make it happen. It only would happen on that date, you know, so it was a coincidence, but all eclipses are coincidences.
Well, no, they're not coincidences. I mean, they're not coincidences in the sense that you can chart them. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Right.
But
it's not like, we're splitting hairs.
Definitely splitting hairs, but it feels like NASA should be the ones to, yes, split hairs on this and call.
So when they first called it an eclipse, I'm like, oh, come on, really? They're so much closer. It's not even close to the same thing. And then I saw the photos, and it's the same thing. like it's majesty. It is. It brings tears to my eyes. And seeing the corona or the zodiacal light, and then Venus, Mercury, Mars, and Saturn all in the same shot.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Getting misty thinking about it right now. It was. And then.
And we're probably not going back for a year.
We're going to be. I'm going to make sure.
I mean,
we don't have a lunar lander.
SpaceX and Blue Origin has got that taken care of.
Right, yeah. They'll get it done in 2 years, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lunar lander. We don't. We don't even have one that's in anywhere near the situation where you'd get it onto a system and launch it. No, it's going to be at least 3 or 4 years before we get up there again.
I thought it was going to be in 2028.
Well, that's what they're saying. But without a lunar lander, the next step is supposed to be an Earth orbit, a low Earth orbit, rendezvous with the lunar lander to attempt to, you know, to make sure that system
works. Or with two of them. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a 30-day mission. They're going to, like, really exercise.
Right, yeah. My tiny little nut. You need the Starship working, which SpaceX is not doing great on. You need the Blue Origin lunar lander, which is not even, we don't even have like a realistic prototype for that. And you need to be all, you know, ready to go into space and do all the connections for that. We're nowhere near that. And we're not putting the kind of effort that they did in the Apollo missions into this ship.
Do you think they're... Do you think they know stuff that we don't know, and that's why they're committing to this date?
No, I just think that they're committing to date because that's what they always do.
The biggest problem is that there's no long view in government, right? It's each administration. You know, Obama wanted to not go to the moon. He wanted to go to a meteor, you know, or an asteroid or something. Trump started this Artemis thing his first term and was able to see it through in his second term. Got Artemis 2. Government doesn't work. I've said this on the show before, but it doesn't work for long-term planning. There's no way government is ever going to work for something that we have to do 30 years down the road.
No, that's not true, because government has done long-term planning before and in the past and will do in the future, but it's just the high-profile things don't get... Look, there are things that, you know, I think like the big dig in Boston took 30 fucking years to do. Right? It happens. Eventually.
Right, it does happen.
It's just that things like this, where there's so much politics involved in just getting the appropriations for it, there's overruns because there's so much inefficiencies built into the system that it's hard to get them out in the time that's required, especially when you know there's shifting goals all the time, so you can't actually like say this is what we're gonna do, because 2 years from now, who knows?
Yeah, I remember back a long time ago when we were having an argument.
But look at JWST, like that was a 20-year project.
Not space related, but when we're having a conversation about basic living wage or universal health care, right? And you were trying to make the argument that there's enough money in the system that you could pay everyone a basic living wage.
Mm-hmm.
And, care to tell us about it? You know, I'm doing the anti-aging thing. I'm getting more liberal as I get more older, right? And I saw a thing just recently. I'm pretty sure the numbers check out, but the Iran war so far could have paid for college for everyone for 100 years.
Not surprising.
College for everyone who wanted to go for 100 years is what we've spent on
bombing
some Persians that
they didn't even ask us to come in and help. Well, they didn't give a shit. Like, they didn't care.
It's so hard to be like, talk about geopolitical politics. I mean, I am totally against what we did in Iran, but I also don't want Iran to get a nuclear weapon, right? There's competing things going on, and I think that was this the right way to do it? No. And is it good to have an unstable person in charge of this operation?
Unstable is an understatement.
Yeah. But are there legitimate things there?
We're here today. Put a search on YouTube for the Iran Lego Pete Hegseth video. It fucking slaps. It's such a good song. Why don't you fill us in? Okay, don't do it.
Oh, I'm sorry, it is good.
It slaps.
I said AI slop bullshit.
Still a good song.
That's the thing. That's what I hate about AI is AI slop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the real fucking problem with AI is generative AI that people think is creative, but looks the same, sounds the same. Mm-hmm. Everything is, there's no creativity behind it. It's just bereft of any soul. It's awful. Awful. It is a curse on culture that is going to be hard to get rid of.
Mm-hmm. We sound like old people.
It seems like you're almost exactly the same.
We are.
Untrue. I'm a mother.
Making a point.
Change my perspective.
And do you find it difficult juggling kids and a career?
We have to embrace it. I'm not against young people being creative. Even shit I don't understand. Skibbity toilet shit. Whatever, you know? Let it rain. Skibbity toilet or whatever that bullshit.
I watched all of Skibbity Toilet. There's a story there. I mean, is it the best story? No, but there's a story there.
I'm not going to put down anybody doing creative shit. I am going to put down people using generative AI to fake doing creative shit.
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
Say something about the motherfucking prequels, bitch. Yeah. Say something fucking nice about Jar Jar Binks. Now kiss him right.
What? What's not playing in the background?
I think this is Natalie's rap from Lonely Island.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Natalie. Yeah. Please come meet your baby. He cried.
Yeah, Artemis, though. I was hooked on every moment of the entire thing.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great. And it's too bad that we're not going to... We don't really have a good plan for whatever the next thing is. Mm-hmm.
You're a mess, Carl.
Okay, well, that's...
And it's not like SLS is an easy rocket to... I mean, it works, which is great. It's like, it's pretty, like, they spent so much time and so much fucking money that it's pretty flawless, which is great. But it's also finicky as fuck. Like, they had to delay this, like, 5 times because of how finicky the rocket is.
The helium leaks,
yeah. And it's, yeah, no, it's not. It's not sustainable. Mm-hmm.
Allie was like, "Weren't you worried when they went, you know, out of radio contact behind the moon?"
No,
and I, you know, made the point where it's like, it's not like they're doing any maneuvers, right? Yeah. They're just coasting here.
It's just gravity. Gravity works.
The only risk is that something in the life support system malfunctions and they can't get extra support from Earth. Because, you know, talk about Apollo 13, one of the ways they survived was because you had the smart people, a ton of smart people on the ground, problem solving, and they were just executing the problem solving skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so
they went through a blackout too.
Yeah, but the mission is baked in where they want to. They want, since it's only the brains of the four people, low risk time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when they're going behind the moon, they're not doing anything risky. They're continuing their observations.
Yeah, and it, and in terms of what's going to happen, I mean, that's just Newton. That's just Newton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I explained, like, you know, it's gravity wise, it's a straight line. Yeah. They're just going in a straight line.
Exactly.
You know? And I kind of explained that. I used the analogy of that coin funnel. You know, like, remember, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I know you don't love the rubber sheet bowling ball analogy for.
It's not perfect, but it's fine.
And for someone who you're introducing the concept to.
It gets the idea across. Yeah. Like, I find that the visual analogies for general relativity are a lot better than the visual analogies for quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with that as like a shorthand, because it gets the idea.
Yeah. So
you can't explain spin. That's something that requires me.
Yeah.
But you can essentially explain what's going on in real tensor mechanics with this.
I mean, you kind of can explain spin insofar as you need symmetry, right? Like, and am I getting it wrong? Like, on a basic enough level, you have spin up, you have spin down. You're looking at me like I'm totally fucking wrong.
You are fucking lost.
Okay.
Man.
All right. Okay. All right.
No, you're talking about spinners versus versus like vector. Like, you.
I thought there was like a. I thought there needed to be a symmetry. So like that's why
it is a symmetry. But keep in mind, the symmetry of a spinner is that it requires 720 degrees for it to come back to its original position if you rotate in space, as opposed to 360 degrees. Explain that. I'll give you all of me until there's nothing left. I swear the summer will be summer camp, bitch.
It's mirrored the first time around, so then second time around it's unmirrored. I don't know. That'd be my
explanation. You rotate it once around, it's out of phase, is essentially.
Yeah, or mirrored, you know.
But how does that work?
Yeah,
from a perspective like how would you draw that?
Asking me how is two rotations one rotation? I'm saying the first time around it's inside out, you know, and the second time around it's right side out, you know, like that kind of thing.
And that's sort of it. But again, here's the problem with all these explanations. And now I see Shannon getting lost.
No,
bored.
But here's the problem with all these
explanations: is they're missing pieces. Mm-hmm. Like they're missing important pieces, and things that can really only be described, as far as I know, with mathematics. So you're always telling little fibs. I know that one time a while ago that really disturbed you, and it was like, how come you can't tell a whole story? And it's like, well, because
when you taught us like shell or orbits, you know, yeah. Electron orbits, mm-hmm. you know, shit like that, yeah.
And it's like, well, because it's a mess, man. Like getting to the actual what's going on.
That would have been helpful learning in two. It's like, this is all an approximation of our physics. Like, no teacher ever told me that shit.
That's an important thing. It's like, okay, remember what I said in the show, like the whatever it was, the hottest place in the universe, the hottest place that we've measured in the solar system.
Yeah.
Is in CERN, got 100 million degrees Celsius. That is nothing. Like, on the scale of temperatures that we believe the universe has experienced, that is still like ice cold. And the issue
is that temperature in CERN hotter than like the temperature in the most critical part of like a thermonuclear detonation? I'm curious because you're talking about.
I don't know that for sure.
So the reason I'm asking, and I'm just gonna jump in here so you can, when your follow up, you can include this and satisfy it. Is, you know, you said the hottest place in the universe. I was imagining a place that was more long term lasting. Right? We're in CERN. It's very hot for very short instances.
Yes.
And so atomic bombs are like that too. So mm-hmm. that's why I was asking.
Yeah. The same kind of thing applies, but. I don't know if you've ever learned anything about like something called renormalization. You may have heard of it.
Never heard of it. No,
but it has to do with when we're doing quantum field theory, there are unknowns that we just plug in numbers for because we have them. The mass of certain particles. It's not expressly defined in the theory, but we can measure them, so we plug in numbers for them. That helps us get rid of infinities in a weird way. People like Feynman and other people at the time were really upset about this because it feels like a cheat hack. What are you doing here? This is not, you're not getting to something with your first principles. You're plugging in things through observation, but this doesn't actually help tell you anything. It certainly gives you accurate information.
Right. It solves a lot of problems.
Right.
It doesn't solve the problem.
It doesn't solve the problem. And the way that this really became understood and accepted was that, yeah, all we're experiencing is the universe as it's really, really cold. We don't know what the theory says about stuff when it gets to extraordinarily hot temperatures, like very close to the Big Bang. The physics of that is completely unknown. So this is what we're saying is we can define things very well in this boundary, as long as we set these boundary conditions that, you know, it's not ridiculously hot. And ridiculously hot for us is stuff like thousands of trillions of degrees.
So, okay, here's a question for you. I understand how when things get hotter, particles break down into...
Let me put it this way. In quantum field theory, mass and even energy... mass runs with energy. So the mass of a particle, we have it defined, right? As you increase the energy, that mass gets higher.
Couldn't stop the addiction.
Question was, does temperature... Do we have anything where temperature affects, like, the fabric, the space-time, not the bosons and the thises and the thats, but the actual, like, fabric, the space-time? Do we expect that changes at these super high temperatures, or is that
general
kind of
relativity is a tensor that has in it the energy density of the space, but also the pressure and shear, and so that is, so that's all part of the quantity that measures what's called stress energy in that tensor. But when it gets to a certain point, the numbers stop making sense. The calculations stop. That's where, you know, you get singularities, which are, yeah, you're 1 divided by 0 is singularity. And then people talk about singularities like they're a thing. They're not a thing. They're a mathematical point where shit stops making sense. Singularities happen all the time. Singularities happen in phase transitions when ice goes to water, right? What is the point where that happens? It's a singularity. The physics stops behaving one way and starts behaving a different way. When a top is spinning and suddenly, you know, it's wobble, 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 suddenly falls over, that's a singularity. It's a transitional point. We don't understand when things get too hot, when things get too high energy. Stuff breaks
gravity
down.
Gets too strong.
Yes, stuff breaks down. Our math stops working. So what we have is we understand stuff in certain boundary conditions that are perfectly valid for the universe that we live in, because the universe happens to be exceptionally cold in comparison to what it could potentially be and what it seems to have been in at one point in the past.
So... how, like, you know, in my basic understanding of the steps since the Big Bang, inflation, all that stuff, like, where does it break, like temperature wise like, I guess we don't really get inflation, so that's probably on the we don't get it side of
the universe. Starts behaving like the universe that we understand approximately 10 to the negative 12 seconds after the Big Bang event. So a trillionth of a second.
That's all.
That's the amount of time it took for the universe to cool down enough to be for electroweak symmetry to be broken, which is where we start really understanding the universe. So that's where the weak force and electric force and the electromagnetic force broke, mm-hmm. and are now two different forces. And like, yeah, so 10 to negative 12 seconds after.
Yeah.
So, and so a very tiny period of time, but
a lot happened.
A lot happened. And the universe was, and the other thing that
the universe was a lot of different things in that tiny period of time.
Yes, the other thing to keep in mind about the Big Bang is it didn't happen in place. Like somebody says, where's the Big Bang happened? One thing I like to say is it happened. Where are you? And they'll tell me where they are. Like if I'm on a phone call or something. Mm-hmm. Happened. Yeah, it actually the center of the Big Bang was about 20 miles from where you are, believe it or not. And they'll be like, what? And I'd be like, yeah, it also happened right exactly where you are and where I am and in the Andromeda Galaxy and everywhere. The universe expanded everywhere. That's the thing about the Big Bang that's so hard to conceptualize is that it didn't have a center. It was every place, every point in space that existed expanded. Mm-hmm. Imagine, the way I like to put it is, you can think about a rock dropping into a pond, right? It makes a bunch of ripples. That's easy to understand. Imagine every point on the pond that's an infinite pond has a rock dropped on it. That's the Big Bang. I'll kill them on principle. As we understand. Some call crack bazoo. So that's a lot harder to explain. What do you think, Shannon?
I don't know.
I don't expect this to make any sense because it shouldn't.
I mean, the analogy of marker dots on a balloon kind of works, you know, too. Right?
There's so many things wrong.
I know, but for the people listening, you know, like you blow up the balloon and you get further from the other dot, but like.
But you're not moving, and the other thing is, and the other. Dot isn't moving either, and that's the thing about expansion in space is that it's so hard to say that it's not that space is expanding, because it's not like the space between you and I is actually expanding. That's not happening. Mm-hmm. It's on different scales. Yeah. Something very different is happening.
We definitely can't actually comprehend the scale. We know how many light years away the next galaxy is, but we don't get it.
Yeah.
We don't comprehend.
Our local group is too gravitationally bound for any of this to have any effect on us. And as the local group is all of the hundreds of galaxies that are in our rough area. But all the stuff that's much, much further away, we see this expansion happen. Mm-hmm. And the Hubble constant is, I think, something like 70 kilometers per second per parsec. No, 70 kilometers per megaparsec per second. That and the telescope keep one lens. Megaparsec is a million parsecs. Is there a thousand or a million? So trusty
well. And do the Kessel run in under 12 of these.
Yeah, yeah. And parsec is 3 point something light years. So every 3 point something million light years. There is.
All right. So why is parsec used in that measurement?
Because
he wants to.
Because astronomers like to stick to their old measurements. Uses,
where did parsec come from?
Parsec comes from. Okay, parsec is a fucking old weird one. All right. You know what a circle is, right?
Yeah,
a circle,
I think,
is
so.
A circle is 100.
So tell me, it's a not a circle.
Is, how many circles? How many degrees are there in a circle?
360, unless you're a spinning particle.
What if you wanted to take one of those degrees and divide that into bits? How would you do that?
Well, you put them into minutes and seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you
okay.
do.
All right.
So 1 second of one arc. Mm-hmm. Is so one so a minute of a degree, there's 100?
60.
Are there 60?
Yeah, 60 minutes in a degree and 60 seconds in a minute.
I think that's right. I forget exactly.
Yeah, no, I guarantee you that part's
okay,
right.
Okay, cool, fine. The parsec, so a second of a degree is where part of the parsec comes in.
And how far away? Because it's the distance, right?
Yes, yes. So then what we do is it's talking about, okay, how do you measure something that's far away? by Parallax, right? The same way you close one eye and you close another eye. Yeah. And you take the Parallax.
Is it based on the orbit of the Earth?
Yes.
Okay.
One side of the Earth versus the other side of the Earth on the sun. So half a year.
Mm-hmm.
The parallax of one arc second of a degree on the sky.
The distance where that cone converges? That's the parsec?
The parsec is you take that number, like the size of the Earth.
So you have a triangle. You have one point, you have 2 points of parallax, mm-hmm. and the point where.
The distance of the hypotenuse of that triangle of the.
The arc second comes in as.
The degree of on the sky. The degree of. Change of position on the sky. Broken like Aladdin. The parallax of one arc second of a degree on the sky.
So on January 1st, you make a measurement, and on June 1st, you make another measurement. And if that star is one arc second to the side,
mm-hmm.
it is a parsec.
It is a parsec away. And that's 3 point something light years. 3.63, I think, something like that.
That's arbitrary as fuck.
It is arbitrary as fuck. So, like, and it has to do with the Earth too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a completely arbitrary.
Such a cool name, though.
Yeah,
such a cool name.
But it's a bullshit measurement.
Yeah.
Because just say light years. I mean, it's not that much more than a light year.
They didn't know the speed of light when they came up with parsecs, I'm guessing, right?
I think
parsecs could be an antiquity kind of thing if you're measuring it that way.
No, parsecs were in the 1800s, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I believe so.
You would think, I mean, you would probably need a telescope to actually make the measurement. So telescopes aren't that old.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems like that would be, especially with the minutes and seconds, I mean, I would have guessed older. I would have guessed that that would have been like a just after Galileo kind of thing.
No, it's in the 1800s. I'm almost certain. But it's just because it's the same way, you know, if you hear astronomers talk about the metallicity, like metals. When astronomers talk about metals, what are they talking about?
I've never heard it. I would guess about, like, the spectra of the light of the stars.
When they talk about, like, a star has high metallicity or low metallicity, the things that are metals to astronomers is anything that's not hydrogen and helium. Because the universe is basically 75% hydrogen, 25% helium, you know, with a little error bar of the extra stuff. And so when astronomers talk about metallicity, they're talking about the tiny bits of, you know, the non-hydrogen or helium that's inside of stars. And that's why you get, like, population 3 stars where almost no metallicity, you really should have no metallicity at all. Then, because of stellar nucleosynthesis, you get metals that start to come in. But metals means anything other than hydrogen and helium, whereas metals from a chemistry perspective is a very different thing.
Yeah. It's about the... I would say that it's about the structure that they form. You know,
It does have to do with the electron, the way the electrons are the way the electron bands work. Chemistry's not my field. And, you know, it's a wonderful field. I'm not trying to throw any shade on chemistry. Chemistry is amazing. But I couldn't give you a good definition of metals without looking it up.
Yeah, I never heard of the astronomer definition of metal.
It's just one of those weird things that just sticks around. There are plenty of these. Like, why is a... Fruit of the fairest. Why is a anti-electron called a positron? That just sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
Since everything else is an anti-something, it's just an anti-electron. It gets confusing if you call it a positron, right? But that was just something, because we discovered them before we really understood what could, I guess, colloquially be called the Dirac C, but it's not really what Dirac proposed, but it's different. But Dirac finally sort of figured out what this all meant. I didn't understand it at the time, but it all comes down to, here's the fucking weird thing, right? Okay, you know what a vector is. You know what a scalar is, right?
Think so.
Did you
No, not right now. Not with beers.
Okay.
I would take a stab at Scalar is... no, I'm worried. I'm just going to disappoint you, Greg.
No. Don't worry about disappointing me. It's fine. Scalar quantity.
Right. I mean, my gut says... I'm going to get it wrong.
So, Scalar is just a number.
Yeah.
And, you know, roughly speaking, a scalar is named that named such because it scales things, right? If you take a 2x2 square and you apply a scalar to it, multiply it by 4, it grows both sides by 4. It just scales things up, right? Mm-hmm. So, cool name, but it's just a quantity. So, a good quantity for a scalar quantity is speed. How fast are you going? That's just a quantity, right? What's a vector, though?
Vector has the, it has like a direction and a
magnitude.
Yeah.
So a vector is an arrow with a length, and that length is what your magnitude is.
Yeah,
but it's an arrow. There's also a direction to it. What Dirac figured out, and this is the fucking weird thing, is you can take a square root of a vector. Don't try to make sense of it.
Okay.
You won't be able to make sense of it without getting some math into it. But you can take the square root of a vector. And because you can do that, you get spinners. That's where spinners come from. It turns out that vectors are built from spinners.
Okay.
And the spinners with a zero, with an O instead of an E. S-P-I-N-O-R-A.
I should have a Z at the end. Be cooler. Spinners.
Yeah. But... spinners are what fermions are.
Okay.
They're half spin. Bosons are single spin.
Yeah, I think, back to my earlier point was when we started doing atoms and electron orbits and stuff, like just a statement from the teacher being like, this is all an approximation, and this is us figuring out the nature that we live in.
Yeah, using math as a descriptive tool because it's so advanced, and we've been putting so much effort into it that it's a good language.
And here's a life
not
lesson.
Not because math is fundamental, but because math is a very good language that's useful.
Here's a life lesson. It works until it doesn't.
Yes.
It makes sense until it doesn't.
Until you hit those boundary conditions, at which point all this shit
No one ever told me that, right?
Yeah.
Growing up, it's like, this is the way it is.
Uh-huh.
Electrons orbit orbit the atom. And there's 2 in the first shell and 8 in the second shell. And
I mean, what's going to fuck you up with that is when you think about how lasers work. Lasers require you to have a population inversion. You have to move everything to a different... energy level and then drop that down to the right energy level. But you can't, if you do that on just a single energy level, then you're actually, it's the same percentage. Anyway, and I could go on. Lasers are really, really cool how they work.
Freaking lasers, man.
But there's a really cool difference between how a 3-stage laser and a 4-stage laser works, because 3-stage laser takes, 5-10 minutes to charge up and fire. But we have lasers everywhere that just start up as soon as you press button, right? That's because instead of having to go to 3 levels, we use the 4th level and change the lasing transition. So instead of having to do an entire population inversion from ground state to something else, you do a population inversion on a higher level. So all you need for population inversion, one electron in the right state. That's why you press a button and turns on. That's skipping past a lot, but that's essentially the idea behind how lasers work. But back to the spinners thing, the reason the spin as a concept in electrons is angular momentum, but it's kind of the square root of angular momentum in the same way that spinners are the square root of vectors. In that, it's not angular momentum that you used to, like rotation. It turns out that rotation is built out of this sort of square root of angular momentum in the same way that vectors are built out of the square root of vectors. So that's what spin is on an electron. It's mathematically something different than you're used to in terms of rotation, but rotation is built out of this concept. That's why it's hard to describe, because you have to mathematically understand what that actually fucking means. And the only way to understand what that means is really in mathematics, because there is no
intuition
for that. And anyone can learn this. I learned it, and I'm a fucking idiot. Anyone can learn this. You just have to spend a lot of time.
You're the smartest idiot I know, Greg.
There's plenty of things where I'm a fucking idiot. And there are plenty of people who are fucking way, way smarter than me.
Okay.
Anyone can do it. Just like anyone can learn to play the accordion. It's just going to take a lot of fucking practice.
A lot.
You got to want to do it. Mm-hmm. You got to want to learn this shit, because it takes effort.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand all that shit. And you know, like I pointed, like I can pull things, I can, what a parsec is, what all the shit is, from my mind, but I couldn't tell you what metals are in chemistry, because a different shit. That's plenty important shit that is useful and practical and that people make use of all the time, and it's just something I don't have the, you know, I haven't done the work.
It happens regularly for me. I start watching Three Blue One Brown. I get it. Then I don't get it.
Then you don't get it, yeah.
And the way he ramps up, and you know, at a certain point, it's like over my head. I'll watch it.
You keep going with that, because that's what I found is really helpful with Matthew. Keep going and keep going. And sometimes you have to watch it again and again. But sometimes you keep going, and it falls back into place. It gets out of, wait, what? And you're kind of missing it, but then something else will pull it back. And you're like, oh, no, I get it. And then you want to go watch it again just to make sure you captured all the stuff that you got. But there is something that like flips that. I remember that happened with number five on the Grams number video. The number very first Grams number.
Those super big numbers. That's my. I love. We talked about this before, but like numbers are the numbers that are so big that you have to come up with new ways to write them.
Yeah,
like just. That idea where they make no functional sense in solving any problems other than understanding number theory.
I love, my favorite quote about Graham's number was Matt Parker is awesome. I don't know if you've, I hope you're subscribed to me. It's great.
Yeah, I watch Stand Up Mass.
Yeah. But he pointed out that, okay, so this weird mathematical problem, I'm not sure, Shandy, if you ever heard of this, but this weird mathematical problem. There's a boundary. The answer to this is between 6 and Graham's number.
It's Graham's not 5. Number, it's not 5.
It's not 5. It's not 1. It could be 7, right? It's between 6 and Graham's number. Graham's number cannot be written in any way that makes, like, that you can't put a decimal expansion of that in the universe. It won't fit. Mm-hmm. But it's not infinity. So from a mathematical standpoint, as Matt Parker said, we pretty much nailed it.
It's a bounded set.
So
Shannon, there's numbers, you know, what's the biggest number you can think of?
I don't know. I'm too tired.
No, it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to make,
the first thing comes to your mind.
Not trying to make
14 trillion, gazillion.
Yeah. Okay. We even go with gazillion.
Yeah, gazillion.
Gazillion's fine. I mean, gazillions don't exist, but for this demonstration, pretend
they might as well, because you could probably make up what a gazillion is and write that out.
Pretend a gazillion is 100 times past the 100 orders of magnitude past the trillion.
Yeah. You could conceivably write that down, right? Mm-hmm. You could just write all the zeros.
And it might fill a whole book, but you could still write it down.
Mm-hmm. Or several books. I mean, if you get big enough. There are numbers that are so big that there's not enough space in the universe to write down all the digits. I'm drinking whiskey. If you occupied every plank space in the universe.
So are you familiar with scientific notation? You know, like, 6.02 times 10.
When I said 10 to the negative 12, right? Yeah. That's scientific notation.
So there's these exponents that you basically take So 10 to the 2 is 10 times 10. Yeah. And then 10 to the 3 is 10 times 10 times 10. So it'd be 1,000, right? So the number on the in the little, you know, so it's 10 and then a little 2 superscript above it. I can't see your retina.
I'm tired.
Yeah. So that's one way of expressing big numbers is using the superscripts,
mm-hmm.
right? But what if that superscript gets too big to write? What if that superscript is 700,000 million characters long, right? Like, then what do you do? So then they have things with arrow notation.
What if you have a superscript that is a superscript of a superscript of a superscript of a superscript of a superscript? That's what arrow notation is. Yeah. So the 3 arrow 3 is just 3 to 3rd. 3 arrow arrow 3 is actually pretty simple, just 3 to 3rd to 3rd. But 3 arrow arrow arrow, 3 to 3rd to 3rd is about 7.7 trillion. 3 arrow 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 3 is a 3 with a 3 with a 3 in the superscript, 7.6 trillion threes. And that is... And the very starter grand number is 3 arrow 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 arrow, so 4 arrows 3, and that's G1, and then G2 is 3 G1 arrows 3, and that's G2. So you have a tower of threes that is impossible to write down in any type of notation already, and yet you go that 64 times and you can. And that's nothing compared to Tree 3.
Yeah, so there's this thing about, like, what's the simplest way to write the biggest number? And there's rules around it, and I can't describe them right now because of beers. And I couldn't do it sober either, but I'll blame the beers right now.
I'm not a, you know, I don't, the areas of math that I'm interested in is not.
So, yeah, you got Tree 3, you got, like, the Busy Beaver thing, mm-hmm. you got the...
There's just, it turns out that there's so many ways to, the thing is that numbers are, like, number theory is amazing. It is not a theory that I'm actually interested in because that's not the math that yeah. I like to focus on. Well, but so with it's tree, very cool.
With the tree function, right? Tree 1 is 1. Tree 2 is 3. And then, so... You know functions, right? Where you have tree, which is a calculation, and then with the input parameter of 1, the answer is 1. Tree 2, the answer is 3. Tree 3, with the input parameter is 3, is in the biggest number. Like, you know, in our...
It dwarfs Graham's number that we're talking about. It makes Graham's number look tiny.
How do you make a function?
But it's not infinite.
But how do you make a function where it goes from 1, 3 out of this universe?
Yeah. And it's where math and logic, you know, where the logic comes into the part of math and where practicality goes out the window. But it is.
Well, there's like, is there any practical application of arrow notation? Like, I don't think there is.
Yes, I think there is.
I thought exponential notation handles anything practical.
Yeah, I know arrow notation has been used for different things than just Graham's number. Like, it was new to arrow notation.
But it's number theory, not practical.
Yeah, but that could ultimately be used to demonstrate something that then has practical usage. Like elliptic curve.
Perhaps. What are you reaching for?
Never mind.
The knots in the board?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go sing some karaoke, babe?
No.
I think she's real tired.
I am. I mean, I went to bed at after 3 a.m. Yeah. Friday morning.
I slept till 1, so I'm like fine.
Friday morning. Thursday night, Friday morning, I couldn't sleep. So it was after 3 a.m. when I went to bed.
Still didn't listen to Noah Kahan.
No.
Rude. She was joking about staying up late to listen to it, but she didn't.
Yeah.
I'm just teasing.
Well, I mean, it'll help you go to sleep.
Oh, no. I mean, I've listened to it many times. I know most of the songs by heart now.
I think that we've mathed out. And you stayed the whole time.
I did stay. Maybe
that's because you're still salt
maybe
in that bowl.
Physically, but not mentally.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you learned some things by osmosis, or maybe like
I did.
Yeah.
The number notations. The thing I want you to remember about the notations is that
me.
Yeah. There's numbers so big they had to figure out new ways to write them because you mm-hmm. couldn't write enough digits.
Yeah. The thing I'd love you to remember is that this is stuff that anyone can learn, even you, if you wanted to. But I don't expect you should want to or desire to. Only that should you desire to, it's open. Like it's not secret. You can learn it, and you can learn it just by reading a lot, and there are like plenty of lectures and stuff online that you could start with, and you have to get textbooks and do some problem sets. But yeah, you can learn this if you wanted to, and I don't expect you would, but I'm just pointing out that people think of like general relativity and quantum field theory as extraordinarily hard things, and they're not easy, but they fit in the same bounds to me as any other thing, and I don't think I'm special at all for learning them. It's just that was what I was thinking. And if you wanted to learn something like that, you could, no matter what subject it was. And that's the beauty of the information age that we were in.
What was the point in your learning of this stuff where it's easy to learn when it's intuitive, it makes sense, you see where you're going, right? But where you're at, you probably hit several walls where you're like, what the fuck? And like, why the fuck? And why do I care the fuck? And other than wanting to know the secrets of the universe, right? I mean, sure, I understand wanting to know the secrets of the universe.
Yeah.
But there's probably points where, like,
wonder how things work.
But there was probably bumps. And you're like,
oh, yeah.
I don't fucking get this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any fucking sense. Do you have any?
Well, calculus was the first start.
What's that?
Calculus. I had to get past that. Green's functions.
I don't even know what Green's function is.
Yeah, you don't
know.
Is there any way you can explain this so the people listening would understand what the fuck we don't want to know
about?
There are
sort of analytic functions that help in solving certain problems. It's not, they're useful in certain cases. They're machines. They're machines. They're mathematical machines that you can apply. They're easier ones like Dirac matrices and stuff like that. They're easier to apply. Green's functions are harder to apply. But all these stuff are just mathematical machines. So the little stuff you put numbers in the right place and you run. Mm-hmm. Like the quadratic equation. It's a little machine, right? You put numbers in because something comes out. There you go. All these functions are just machines.
Speaking of quadratics, maybe not real quick, but try to be quick. Shannon wants to go to bed.
I'm fine.
Doing those in school, hated them.
Mm-hmm.
Hated them, hated them, hated them. If they were probably proposed more as the puzzle that they are, or maybe like, what do they actually solve?
Yeah, yeah. It's all taught wrong. It's all taught.
But then when I was helping Allie when they were doing quadratics, I kind of, I brushed up on it. Like,
yeah, yeah. No, it makes sense if you dive deep into it.
Like, that's why they're a thing.
Yeah.
It's true. I doubt my teacher told me why. Teacher probably wasn't that good, but,
teacher probably didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, the teachers who teach math in primary school are not the people who know math. They're just, that's, what they were assigned to teach, and so they, but they're not.
It's a shame, really.
Yeah, because no, there is real interesting stuff
in not college, but in elementary, middle school, senior, or high school. Did you have any fantastic teacher that sparked your interest in?
And I had good teachers who kept my interest, but I was pretty decent at just coasting. That's sort of why I didn't do well in college, because it was really easy to coast through high school.
Yeah. So I didn't, I mean, I took I basically failed algebra in ninth grade. I had to take it again in 10th grade. You know, I wasn't ready for for high school.
Shit, when I started to learn this stuff, I didn't even know basic trigonometry.
Yeah. The, I have one, like, chemistry, biology, blah.
And trigonometry is all you need to understand special relativity.
Yeah. I had two teachers. My geometry teacher in 10th grade, he was awesome. I think it was 10th grade. And it's like, oh, it was like that peek into you can use math to solve real problems versus math is just problems that you solve for an answer or a grade, right? But then, so geometry and then physics. When I took my physics teacher was this guy. We were his last year. He was retiring the year after. Old guy, you know, and the way he taught the class, he was kind of lighthearted about it. For tests, you could bring in a sheet front and back of all your helper stuff so you didn't have to memorize equations and stuff. You just had to know how to prepare for the test, you know, that kind of thing, which teaches you in its own way. But, like, I didn't appreciate what physics was until I was in physics. And I'm like, oh, wait, you can use math to figure out the world? Like, what? What?
I would say it took me a while to grasp totality of Lagrangian mechanics. It's a way of formulating Newtonian mechanics that turns out to be a whole lot easier if you're trying to solve certain problems. Like, Newtonian mechanics tend to be the worst way to solve a lot of problems. I mean, they introduce you to, you know, very, you know, interesting problems and useful problems. But
so what you're trying to know about Lagrange is the points where gravity balances out.
He did that too. But
so
what's
this? I mean, presumably this is something else. What is this?
You use something called the Euler-Lagrange equation to solve the equation of motions for your system, and then you can plot out a Lagrangian density.
Actually, I think Veritasium just did a thing about the Euler-Lagrange stuff like last week, I think.
Oh, I haven't been. I've really stopped watching Veritasium.
It's different now.
Yeah.
It's very different now that Derek has stepped back and they got the three other guys hosting the episodes.
It's not great. So I'm not really that interested.
But I think like in the last week or two, they did something about Euler-Lagrange. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Check it out and grade it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like the basic idea for how we do quantum field theory is you get a... I'm not even gonna go into it. But there's a difference between Lagrangian
density.
Shannon's
still here. I'm so proud.
My
of you.
My eyes are closed.
I'm so proud of you.
But there's a lot, and also like it's been years since I've really been deep into this. So there's stuff that like you could put. I can still read a paper and get the gist of it, but. Normally, when I would read papers, I would like also solve the you know equations along with it. So like, okay, now I'm getting what I'm doing. Now I'm sort of glossing over them and say, okay, I'm accepting that. But it's really helpful, especially when you're learning to do that, to like work the equations, get the same answer. I'm like, okay, yeah, I see what they're saying. Because all these are, again, are just you're learning a bunch of different machines and applying them.
I wonder now if, you know, I didn't take calculus until community college, and I wasn't invested in community college. I called it 13th grade. And I actually withdrew from my calculus class because I was just hopelessly failing it. Part of it was
you got to do the work. You got to do the problems.
Yeah,
that's you got to get an intuition for what's going on, and you got to learn all the little tricks.
Yeah, I know. If I could have got the hook, if I could have got the first hit for free, and got addicted to the problem solvingness of it, maybe. But it just didn't.
I mean, the cool thing about calculus is that the explanation for what it is really easy. It's just area under a curve.
No, I did explanation. You know, like. You know, you're reeling in a rope. How much does the rope weigh at any instant?
Yeah.
You know, I get that. You know, it changes every instant.
Mm-hmm.
And there's math that lets you get that or approximate it or actually get, you know it.
Yeah. But then you get into shit like tensors. Tensors are fucking hard. Tensors was a big hard point for me because there are rigorous mathematical definitions of a tensor, but as teacher explained, probably the best definition of a tensor is a tensor is something that transforms like a tensor, which is a terrible definition, but it means you recognize what's a tensor and what's not. And that way you understand this is not a tensor, so I can't transform it in the same way. I have to use something else to add to it to make a tensor. That's what, like, if you look at some of the equations, like, if you look at general relativity in certain places, things like Christoffel symbols are there because you have pseudo-tensors. You can't make a tensor out of it. You got to put something in there to make it a tensor. So in order to be able to do the transformations, transformation is just, you know, moving your coordinate system without changing the quantities, but and then getting an answer out of it. Transformation is, I turn this and it's the same. My understanding of this is the same. This I turn, it's the same. It's all about symmetry, right?
Right.
There's the rotational symmetry with this bowl.
I guess I don't know what tensor is. I would have guessed that it was quantity, like in an orientation or something like that.
It's
no, sorry, I opened a can of worms.
It's hard. Yeah, I don't want to. It's hard to explain without getting deep into it. But it's the expansion of a vector into a multidimensional thing, a multilinear map, basically.
Oh, easy peasy.
Yeah,
let's get into it.
Yeah,
Shannon wants to know.
Think about vectors is vectors live in tangent space, and so then you have to wonder about where tensors live. Anyway,
I love my tangent space. It's my favorite space. So much tangent space here.
Well, that goes into shit that I never really got in super deep into, which is like things like fiber bundles and
every morning I wake up and get my fiber bundles.
Your
fiber bundles. You can define
your fiber bowels.
Bowels bundles. Yeah.
Yeah.
110, 220, whatever it takes.
Space-time, as we understand it, is like M4, the Minkowski metric. But if you were to imagine Newtonian space-time, that's something that you'd probably consider R3 bundled over R1.
Of course. What if you wouldn't think that? Fucking Newtonian space.
No, I love group theory. Group theory is there was a point that I was like, oh, I love this, and that was group theory.
I always wondered about
it. Yeah. Group theory was when I was like, I have to follow this as far as I can take it because this is fucking amazing. And it's just a way of grouping things together into symmetries that make sense, but it felt so radically intuitive. But I've heard people who just fucking bounced off it. So that's just me. Yeah. I think we've bored people, including Shannon, enough.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
All right.
Tired.
Happy April, everyone.
Yay.
Happy birthday, Maley.
She's not listening to this. She ain't too
probably not.
Show.
But
maybe she
gotta say it anyway.
Goodbye.
Bye.